Welcome to Disc 2 of Beyond the 7 Habits with Dr. Stephen R. Covey. And now we return to the program.
And one road will lead to greatness, the unleashing of human potential. The other road leads to stagnation, to mediocrity, the straitjacketing, the strangling of human potential. You saw 8 cylinders go to 1.5. Admittedly, the way I used that metaphor was arbitrary, but you raised your hands. You know the social friction. You know the disallowing of so much talent and potential. And you know how much energy is spent on things that are urgent but not important. We all acknowledge this. The problem is how we move to a new paradigm, to a mind and a new skill set. Leave the one on the right up, and the one on the left, put down our birthright. These are the birthday gifts given to us all. There's basically 3 of them. We'll go through each one slowly. First, the freedom and power to choose. That is the greatest of all birthday gifts. Second, principles, natural laws, and third, the 4 intelligences of our nature. Not just intelligences, put intelligences / capacities. We have physical, our body, call that PQ, IQ for our mind, EQ for the heart, SQ for the spirit. The purpose of those 4 capacities is to enable us to live for the body, to love for the heart, to learn for the mind, and to matter, to leave a legacy, to contribute in principled ways for the spirit. These are hardwired into our nature. This is our birthright. Every one of us has them. Like Esau, who sold his birthright for a mess of pottage. Max sold his birthright in a kiss-up culture for Mr. Harold. Literally did. Now, Max the dog didn't, because he has no freedom and power to choose. But you and I can become transition figures. We could stop the transmission of bad stuff with our generation from going to our kids. You may have been abused. You don't abuse your kids. You may not have been, say, physically or sexually abused, but you may have been abused verbally or emotionally by being compared with your brother and sister and love given conditionally, to where little by little you grew up with a comparison-based identity that makes it hard for you to be genuinely happy for the successes of your own siblings, your own brothers and sisters. You might say you're happy for them, but inwardly you're eating your heart out, and you know it. Because you have a software program in there that says your worth comes from people's opinions of you, and those opinions are based on how well you stack up to other people. And so you move from one culture, whether it's the family, or athletics, or academics, or economics, and deep into the bowels of these industrial cultures is a normal distribution curve, a force ranking system, and a single career path where all of the psychic and financial benefits go toward management, promoting the Peter principle, where people are promoted to the level of their incompetencies. And then the other host of things, such as an accounting system that calls people an expense, and the carrot and stick motivational system. I mean, we could go into every aspect of business of the industrial model and see how deeply flawed it is when you consider the concept of a whole person, body, mind, heart, and spirit. And the idea of how do you get people pointing north in the same direction? you know, the experience that led to the seven habits and became truly life-changing. It was in about 1979 when I was writing a book over in Hawaii, wandering through the stacks of a library at a university. I pulled down a book, and it says in it three sentences which completely stagger me. So compelling, so absorbing, I could hardly think of anything else. I just memorized them, but I went back to the book again and again. I was just so unaware, really, that I didn't ever find the book. I went back a few years later to find the book, and the library wasn't there. But the three sentences were these: between stimulus and response is a space. In that space lies our freedom and our power to choose our response. In those choices lie our growth and our happiness. So if I could choose to obey principles that are universal, timeless, and self-evident in developing these four capacities, I could find my voice. If an organization could exercise its collective power to choose and be centered upon principles that do not change and that are universal, that aren't religious, but that are universal natural laws, and look at its unique competencies, it could find its voice. If I could find a student and care enough about that student to know them well and to affirm them, if I could find a child and care so much about the child that I move out of the comparison software approach and get to know deep inside the nature of that child and affirm them, including their own power and right to choose and to cultivate these capacities until they would come to know their voice. If I could do that, then I could really add value to life and to people. This is the basis of habit one, which is the foundation of all of the other six habits. I didn't invent this, and the author of the statement didn't invent this either. In fact, intellectually, I already knew it. But for some reason, I was in such a needful and open and reflective mode, I connected to it emotionally as never before. Max the dog is like the model at the bottom. There's no space there. Max the person is the model at the top. And here are the four capacities inside of us that are unique to a human being. No animal has one degree of those four. It's not a matter of degree, it's a matter of kind. You and I can reinvent our life. We can stand apart from the programming of our past and write our new program through the power of imagination. We can swim upstream through willpower against culture. And we have an innate sense of what is right and wrong. A conscience. I'm not talking about a social conscience that the wrong is in getting caught or not being fashionable or politically correct. I'm talking about a deep ethical sense of what is right and what is wrong. Heart, mind, spirit, body. Now, the more I would use those four unique human gifts or endowments, the larger this would become. Look how small it is here. The more I use it in my relationships with others, look how large it becomes. I could learn to love unconditionally, even though I was never loved unconditionally. I was always compared, let's say. If I could learn to love unconditionally, I could also learn to say, I am sorry, I apologize. To a person whose security lies in being right, that would be the equivalent of an ego enema. They could not do that. It would wipe them out. I can learn to forgive a brother or a sister where we'd had friction with each other and haven't talked for years. I could learn to do that. But if my security lies in how right I was in that situation, and I talked to others to justify me as I condemned my brother or sister or whatever, but still my conscience would say, you've got to heal this thing. In serving human needs, in doing whatever is possible to serve human needs, look how large that is. There is the location for leadership. Right there. Because look at the amount of moral authority is needed to serve human needs. What is the most significant thing happening in the field of law enforcement in this country that is significantly decreasing crime? What is it called? Community policing. Who is the leader? Who's the catalyst that brings that off? The policeman on the street. He or she is the leader. There's the leadership. What does the industrial model say where the leader is? It's in the captain and the lieutenants and the sergeants. No, they're the managers. They're also leaders, only they're servant leaders. What does it mean to be a servant leader? Help, coach, facilitate, remove obstacles, so that the real leaders is done out here.